Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. The Jukwansi are semi-nomadic hunter-gatherers who have lived in the Kalahari Desert for millennia. We all carry their genes. Not so long ago, hunting wild animals in the bush was banned in Namibia in Southwest Africa. Deprived of their food and livelihood, they were forced to turn their lives into tourist attractions, earning money and gifts by selling handicrafts and posing for photos. And the white tourists, who they think of as ghost people, flocked in from all around the world. But what if they became tourists themselves? How would they view Europe, a land filled with ghosts? Ghostland, the view of the Jukwansi, is a new feature documentary that follows four of these villagers from the Kalahari as they discover Europe, teach people there how to live as they do, and carry stories, photos, and some of the wealth and technology they encounter back to Namibia. It is directed by Simon Stadler, prize-winning documentarian with a master's in anthropology. The film opens today in Toronto, and I'm very pleased to have here, by telephone from Germany, the film's director, Simon, to tell us more. Hi, Simon.
Hello, it's good. Nice to meet you, and it's good to give some information to Canada, and that Canada is so interested about the Jukwansi and their story to come to Europe.
Thank you, and before anything else, let me just offer my condolences for the recent killings in Berlin. Our feelings are with you.
Oh, thanks a lot. Yeah, it's really sad what happened at the moment. It's not only in Germany, all over the world. Yeah, so the human being, sometimes it seems that they're a little bit out of control in the moment. Yeah, so
I agree.
Strange times, yeah.
So what first brought you to the Kalahari?
I was studying with a friend of mine, and he was with me here in the university in Frankfurt, and he's living since 12 years now in Namibia. And he asked me 10 years ago the first time, Simon, what do you think? Come to Namibia and we can make a nice documentation about the Jukwansi. I met them and I have a good really relationship with them, and it would be not interesting to make a documentary about them. And I denied it about 5-6 years, because there are so many documentaries from the 50s, 60s, 70s, many also from the States and from Canada. They went to the Namibian desert, and they document how they live, how they dance, how they hunt, and what they eat and everything like that. So in this moment, the first time, I said every time, no, I think it's not so interesting, because there's so many documentaries about them. And 2010, she called me again and said, Simon, there's happened something. There's a crazy guy from Namibia, and it's a little bit like the Crocodile Dundee from Namibia, and he's a good friend of the Bushmen of the Jukwansi, and he organized a tourist bus for them and want to make for Christmas a tour with them, 2 weeks, to show them their land, yeah, because they get so interested in the last years about how the other people are living, yeah, because so many tourists are coming to them, to the Kalahari, to see how they are living. And in this moment, I was thinking, oh, this sounds really interesting, yeah, to, and we can take a look on the other few, the few of the Jukwansi to us, yeah, to the white people, yeah. And then I asked, okay, that sounds beautiful. And when will it be happened? Yes, I mean, in 3 weeks. Oh, 3 weeks. So it was really a fast decision here in Germany. A friend of mine, Katinia Lermer, she's the co-director, and she was sitting here beside of me when I had the telephone call, and she said, oh, I come with you, yeah? And she is a singer in a band, and then she got the tone equipment, the sound equipment, and she was responsible for the sound. And I have a small production company, so I have all the equipment for sound and camera and all the stuff here in my office. And then we put the things together, and 1 week later, we fly by airplane to Namibia. And we went together with my friend, the anthropologist, to the village, and we stayed there 2 weeks without filming, only staying with them. And after this 2 weeks, this tour with this crazy Namibian, Werner, this Crocodile Dundee from Namibia, starts the tour. And then we start to film, and then we were with them two till three 3 weeks together in this bus and in the Kalahari, not the, out of the Kalahari. And then we went back to their village, and then we stayed 2 months more there and were filming. And for our luck, it was half a year later, came this beautiful invitation from Germany, from the German government, together with a school, that four of them, you Nazis, have the possibility to come to Europe. And it was a beautiful, beautiful moment for us, because then we can get deeper inside of this other view to us. So it's, in the end, it's like a mirror for us. It's not so much about the living style of the Yukwansis. It's more about our living style through the eyes of the Yukwansis.
Right. But before you left, there's a lot of footage in the movie where sometimes the Yukwansi are dressed in traditional clothing.
Exactly.
And sometimes they're wearing Western style blue jeans, sweatshirts, things like running shoes.
Exactly.
Which of those is their costume, and which of those is their real way of dressing them?
In the moment, it's both. It's a costume, and both is their real clothes. Yeah, since the contact with the tourists, and since they cannot hunt, yeah, they are sitting in the Kalahari, but they are also there. There are trucks passing by, and they have the contact to the civilization. They know what a television is. They know this Western-style clothes. And in the last 20 years, so many people went there, gave them clothes and like that. But in the summer, they all wear traditional clothes. But when it's cold, it's getting cold in winter. The winter is in June, July in Namibia. They like to use European-style clothes because they are more warm. And in the moment, sometimes they use it like when you are walking through the village, it's a mixture about the traditional clothes and the Western style clothes there. But it's not like a statement. In the end, they use both. So I think in the moment, they are on the edge of the acculturation, and both are costumes and both are their normal clothes there.
Okay. Well, when they went to Europe, what was it that you think, or that you found, shocked them or surprised them or fascinated them the most?
Yeah. I think in the first moment, the shock was only this massive attack of traffic, so much people in one place. The people don't know each other. This is something for them. It's unbelievable in the end. Yeah. When they meet some other group in the Kalahari, for less they need, they know a family member of the other group. So there's every time a connection, and they cannot understand that when we are in big cities, that there are so many people that you don't know the other people, and that you don't know if they say hello. Yeah. This is strange for them. But I think in the first moment it was the traffic, all the sounds of the city, the airplanes. Here in my city in Frankfurt, there's a lot of airplanes in the sky the whole time, and this was really strange for them. But after a while, they get used to this, to the sound level and to this many people. And I think the worst experience for them were after a month or after 5 weeks, when they realize that we don't have this possibility to live together, yeah? That we are our individualism. This was really strange. After some weeks, they understand this individualism. This is this, not the community. This was counting. The individualism was counting. And that everybody have to work from the morning till the evening. Yeah? And there's no space for my family. The people are stressed and stuff like this. And this, I think, was a real shock in the end, that the white people are not living in paradise. It's more that the white people live like in hell, yeah? That they cannot understand. And that before, when they come to Europe, they thought here must be paradise, and all the white people live in paradise and with their families and happy, and they have everything. And after a while, they realized we are not happy, and we are under a big pressure all time, all days. And it was really strange for them. And it was a time when they start, Simon, can we not go back? They were 2 months here in Europe. And after 4 weeks, they start really, Simon, please, can we not go back? And I said, no, the work for the school, it's starting next week. So you cannot go back in the moment. But this was a moment, I think, where they get really shocked about our lifestyle. And they start to say, I want to go back to the Kalahari. I know we are hungry there, and we are dying about bad life situation, no medical, social service, and stuff like this. Yeah, but we want to go back here. We don't want to stay here. We have food here and everything is good, but we want to go back to our families, where our community is, where we can live together and not against each other.
In general, the reactions of their interactions with Europeans seemed to be very favorable. Were there any negative incidents or negative reactions by Europeans upon meeting them that you just didn't include in the film?
No, not one time in the end. Yeah, it was every time. Okay, in Namibia, because it was a colony of Germany, so the people have this imagination of Bushmen, they have mm-hmm. it in their mind, and so they were really interested, because they see, this is not a normal migrant, that have to be a Bushman. Yeah? So the people were really, really friendly all the time. Yeah? And we were in Holland, in Italy, and in Swiss, and I get only positive reaction for them. And after a while, they really feel really comfortable, because in the beginning also they thought they are so obvious that they are Bushmen. And sometimes they are a little bit ashamed about to be a Bushman. Maybe it's happened about the treatment of the white people to them in Namibia. Yeah? And then they realized, for example, in my city, Frankfurt is full of people from all over parts, all over the world. Yeah? And then they realize the people don't see it that they are Bushmen. So they feel really comfortable after a while, because it was so anonymous for them. Yeah?
So you have a background in anthropology. I wonder what role did that play in your, because you're also a documentarian. Where is the conflict in your relations with the subjects of your movie as an anthropologist versus as a filmmaker?
We thought to make in the beginning really an anthropological film, yeah, and not a documentary for the cinema and stuff like this. Yeah. We thought, maybe it's a film for small anthropological film festivals. So we thought to make really some new point, to open up a new point, to change the perspective. Yeah. And I think this is my roots, like an anthropologist, is responsible for this new perspective, which we are searching for the film. Yeah, that they looking at us, they looking at the white people, and not in the contradiction like 50 times when the white man from Europe or from the U.S. or from Canada are coming to Namibia and take a look of them and observe them. Now they observe us. And this is an idea of the anthropology of the 80s. There was a streaming of the anthropology where they said, we have to change the anthropology, that we don't have this Eurocentric view all the time. And they gave them cameras and make some attempts to change the anthropology. And this was, I think, the basic idea which I bring into the film, yeah.
Do you think them living in front of a camera and a boom or a mic for that period of time, do you think it changed them when they went back to live in their village?
I don't think so, because when the tourists are coming, every tourist have a camera with them, yeah? So they get used a little bit to the camera. The big camera wasn't the first day, was a little bit of shock for them, but they realize, it's not a problem. And many times when there was strange situation, we don't film. I think in this moment also my anthropological heart was stronger than my filmer's heart.
So you were more of a fly in the wall, but you didn't intrude on their most personal space?
Exactly. So many times also when somebody in the village, the life conditions are really hard there, when somebody was dying and stuff like this, we don't film this, because we think the suffering of African people we can see in hundreds of thousands of documentaries. So I think we were more like the anthropological friends with them than like a documentarist who was filming everything what could be interesting for the film. Yeah.
And finally, have the Yukwansi viewed the final film?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we were the first premiere. So we got the invitation to the South by Southwest in Austin, and we denied to come to there because we already organized the traveling to the Kalahari. So when we won the audience award in the South by Southwest, we were in the Kalahari with the generator and with the blanket and with the beamer, and we showed the film in two villages there in the Kalahari 4 or 5 times, because they get so crazy about the film. And they like a film a lot, so this was for us was the most important premiere was in the Kalahari, and they like it because the people who stay in the village and who doesn't went to Europe, they were so jealous in this moment. Oh, Europe, this must be the paradise. And after they look this film, they come to me and said, thanks, Simon. Now we know we never want to go to Europe. We want to stay here with our friends. We hate Europe only from you, from the pictures of your film. And now we know how the reality is in Europe. And we don't live anymore in our dreams. So, and it's good that we know here's our place in the Kalahari, and Europe is more like an inferno for us. Yeah.
It's a wonderful movie, and thanks so much for talking about it.
Oh, thanks a lot for you, and beautiful that you like this film, and enjoy Christmas, and have a good time, and go to the cinema.
Thank you. Simon Stadler's feature documentary, Ghostland, The View of the Yukwansi, opens today in Toronto at the Hot Dock Cinema. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.